Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is April 1, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments in fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about Binance Crypto Exchange is launching its first Bitcoin mining pool. Hive Blockchain to double Bitcoin mining capacity through $2.8 million share deal. BitMEX operator ups grant for Bitcoin development to $100,000. AT&T files for dismissal in $24 million phone hack case, claims crypto exec didn't read terms. Thousands of Microsoft servers infected by crypto mining botnet since 2018, says report. Tether CTO claims USDT stablecoin can boost DeFi liquidity. Amended lawsuit against Ripple now offers theory that XRP may not be a security. Cannabis shops are using Zap's Lightning app during coronavirus cash crunch. GitHub is burying Bitcoin code inside an Arctic mountain to ride out the next 1,000 years. How financial models could move Bitcoin's price after the halving. Now let's get started. Binance Crypto Exchange is launching its first Bitcoin mining pool. Binance is planning to launch its own mining pool, a first for the popular crypto exchange. The news was broken Tuesday by the Russian crypto news publication CoinLife and later confirmed by three sources in the mining business. Binance CEO Changpeng Zhao tweeted about the pool on Wednesday. The company has already hired some professionals for this purpose, some of them former Bitmain employees. The launch is planned for the Q2 2020, CoinLife wrote. Jahon Kabilov, head of the SigmaPool mining pool, said Binance is already offering potential clients generous referral bonuses as it has been reaching out to some miners in China to promote the upcoming new service. The exchange is following the lead of its peers, OKEX and Huobi, which launched their own mining pools in August and September 2019 respectively. Both exchanges' pools are currently among the top 10 pools producing the most blocks in the Bitcoin blockchain, according to blockchain.com. Alejandro de la Torre, the vice president of pooling, currently number two most popular mining pool, says the key motivation for exchanges to get into the Bitcoin mining game is liquidity. Mining is the cheapest way to add liquidity to exchanges, he said. Igor Runts, CEO of the Bitriver mining farm in Russia, believes launching a mining pool is a logical step for a crypto exchange. Both these businesses are software-based, so no additional professional skills are needed. The client base would largely overlap. Many mining pool users are also clients of exchanges. Hive Blockchain to double Bitcoin mining capacity through $2.8 million share deal. A publicly listed Bitcoin mining operator is set to double the size of its operations in a multi-million dollar deal, largely funded through a sale of its shares. Hive Blockchain announced via email this week it's all set to acquire an existing 30-megawatt mining operation in Quebec from rival Canadian mining company Cryptologic for $4 million Canadian dollars, around $2.8 million United States dollars. The acquisition provides us with an advanced, operating Bitcoin mining facility ready to transition to next-generation mining hardware with access to some of the lowest-cost electricity on the planet, said HIVE's interim executive chairman Frank Holmes. See also, miners are selling more Bitcoin than they are mining. The lion's share of the purchase price will be met via a sale of 15 million of HIVE's common shares, at 20 Canadian cents each, 14 United States cents, to Cryptologic, for a total 3 million Canadian dollars, 2.1 million United States dollars. The remainder will be made up through a 1 million Canadian dollars, $700,000, placement. The newly acquired mining facility, which has more than 14,000 Bitmain S9 Bitcoin miners already in place, will more than double HIVE's mining capacity to roughly 50 megawatts. The facility is leased, but Hive said it has plans to exercise an option that will extend the lease by an additional 5 years. The news comes as Hive, which is based in Vancouver, refocuses resources on its conventional mining operations. It's also increasing capacity at its Swedish GPU plant, which mines on Ethereum, by more than 20% over the next two quarters. The operator completely shut down its cloud mining facility, which pools processing power from remote data centers, in Q2 2019, after a year of operation. Holmes said at the time that rising mining difficulty made cloud mining unprofitable. This week's purchase agreement will mean Cryptologic will go on to own roughly 4% of HIVE's common stock. The price of Hive shares, which are listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange, has increased 10% since the deal became public earlier this week. See also, U.S. County extends rule making Bitcoin mining firms invest in renewable energy. In addition, the deal is in line with the company's green energy strategy, as the facility is powered entirely by renewable hydroelectricity, thereby maintaining our 100% green energy-powered operations globally, Holmes said. The deal is expected to close on Friday. BitMEX operator ups grant for Bitcoin development to $100,000. The company behind derivatives exchange BitMEX is increasing the grant it pays to one of the developers responsible for keeping the Bitcoin Core protocol up and running. HDR Global Trading said in a post on Tuesday it had increased the grant it was paying to Michael Ford, also known by his handle Fanquake, from $60,000 to $100,000, made payable over a 12-month period from March 2020. The firm has supported Ford ever since he took up the post of Bitcoin Core maintainer in June 2019. One of five maintainers, Ford helps to ensure the Bitcoin network continues to run efficiently and can propose and make software alterations to the protocol where necessary. A Seychelles-based company, HDR, has provided financial support for other entities, too. 2 months before its grant to Ford, the BitMEX operator made an unconditional donation to the Massachusetts Institute of Technology's Digital Currency Initiative, MITDCI, to finance further cryptocurrency research. The size of the donation was undisclosed, however. See also, top Bitcoin developers face off in a lightning-powered boxing match. Ford has occasionally contributed research to BitMEX research. In early January, he provided data showing how system updates had improved protocol performance and reduced Bitcoin's potential attack surface. HDR's original grant for Ford was set to run from July 2019 to July 2020. However, that has been replaced with the new grant that is aimed to increase transparency for the benefit of the Bitcoin community. The exchange owner insists grants are awarded no strings attached, and that it will not use funding to exert any influence over maintainers. That said, the new grant still has a few conditions. According to a template contract the company posted on GitHub, all work produced has to be open source and must be relevant to Bitcoin development as defined by the reasonable opinion of the grantor, HDR. See also, BitMEX open interest collapses after controversial long squeeze. If the grantee fails to meet any of these conditions, HDR is authorized to terminate the grant immediately. AT&T files for dismissal in $24 million phone hack case, claims crypto exec didn't read terms. U.S. mobile operator AT&T hopes to dismiss crypto investor Mike Turpin's amended case over a SIM swap hack, claiming he had not read the firm's terms and conditions. AT&T's attorneys took issue with three parts of the second amended complaint and his request for millions in punitive damages, arguing they showed the plaintiff was himself mostly responsible for the SIM swap scam, a type of phone hack involving stealing someone's mobile identity. Filed at the federal court in the Central District of California earlier this week, AT&T's motion to dismiss asks the presiding judge dismisses Turpin's concealment and misrepresentation claims, as well as his request for punitive damages, with prejudice. If granted, it would mean Turpin could not bring the matter before the court again. See also, two arrested in Japan for obtaining crypto linked to Coincheck's $530 million hack. Turpin first accused AT&T of civil negligence in August 2018, alleging an employee had been bribed by a criminal gang to pass over control of his SIM card. Turpin claimed the mobile giant knew he was at risk of falling victim to a SIM swap hack but did nothing to warn him or prevent an attack from taking place. He is suing AT&T for $23.8 million in compensation, as well as $200 million in punitive damages. But AT&T argues in this week's filing that Turpin has not been able to show how the company concealed alleged flaws in its data security system or how he was misled. He has already admitted that he had not actually read the privacy policy and code of business conduct documents that he claimed had misled him. Mr. Turpin all but admits that he cannot base a misrepresentation claim on written documents by AT&T, which he does not allege that he even saw or read, much less relied upon, reads the filing. He has all but conceded that his 11 misrepresentation claim should be dismissed with prejudice. A judge denied AT&T's previous dismissal motion in February, giving Turpin 21 days to submit an amended complaint that addressed some of its deficiencies. See also, new crypto exchange Altspit says it will close following hack last December. In a separate case, AT&T filed a motion for dismissal against another crypto executive who had fallen victim to a similar phone hack, claiming the case had critical holes. Thousands of Microsoft servers infected by crypto mining botnet since 2018, says report. A malicious botnet has been targeting Microsoft SQL database servers to mine cryptocurrency for 2 years, according to a new report. Guardicore Labs said Wednesday that in the last several weeks alone, the hackers had managed to infect close to 2,000 to 3,000 servers daily. As reported by Hacker News, the botnet has been dubbed Vulgar after the Valor cryptocurrency it mines alongside Monero, XMR, and its vulgar way of operating. The attack brute forces passwords in order to access servers with poor security. Once in, it executes configuration changes allowing the hackers to run malicious commands and download malware binaries. Entities across healthcare, aviation, IT, telecoms and education in China, India, South Korea, Turkey and the US have all been affected, according to the report. Also read, alleged mastermind of sex abuse chatrooms hid payments with privacy coin Monero. The network of compromised computers was used to host all of the attacker's infrastructure, with its primary command and control server based in China, according to Guardicore. That itself had been compromised by multiple attackers, the firm added. To help companies find out if their servers have been infected by this attack, Guardicore has released a script on GitHub. In other security news, ZDNet reported earlier this week that QR codes now ubiquitous across the Bitcoin industry as a mean of making it easier to make Bitcoin payments have become another attack vector. The shockingly simple attack saw malicious actors provide a purported service allowing people to create a QR code for payments to their Bitcoin addresses. However, the address inserted was the attacker's own. Harry Denley, director of security at MyCrypto, discovered the scheme hosted on 9 websites. According to the report, some $45,000 in Bitcoin, BTC, has been stolen in the last month. See also, Bitcoin's ransomware problem won't go away. For the record, it's advisable to avoid these sites at all costs, bitcoin-barcode-generator.com, bitcoin address to qrcode.com, bitcoins-qr-code.com, btc-to-qr.com, create, bitcoin-qr-code.com, free-bitcoin-qr-codes.com, freebitcoinqrcodes.com, qr-code-bitcoin.com and qrcodebtc.com. Tether CTO claims USDT stablecoin can boost DeFi liquidity. The chief technology officer for Tether and Bitfinex believes the USDT stablecoin can inject much-needed liquidity and stability into the emerging decentralized finance DeFi space. Speaking to CoinDesk recently at the Crypto Compare Digital Asset Summit in London, Paolo Arduino said the DeFi space faced systemic risk if it only leveraged value from the digital asset space. You cannot have algorithmic stablecoins relying only on the crypto assets themselves, Arduino said. The entire value of the DeFi space, a mass of complicated financial products, cannot be based entirely on the value of a volatile asset class without the very real possibility it could all go up in smoke at any moment, he suggested. MakerDAO came dangerously close to an emergency shutdown earlier this month after a sudden spike in demand for DAI stablecoins and activity, as users tried to shore up undercollateralized loans, created a $4 million debt bubble. See also, Tether stablecoin launches on its seventh blockchain. For the DeFi space to grow and attract institutional investors, it has to leverage value elsewhere in order to properly diversify risk. You can say anything you want about Tether, but it's resilient, Arduino said, adding that in his view, centralized collateral of US dollars can provide a safe set of shoulders to the DeFi ecosystem. Tether has already made its first foray into the DeFi space, announcing in early March it had partnered with Ethereum-based lending protocol Aave. Aave CEO Stani Kulichov told CoinDesk that integrating with Tether, which he said was a popular fiat gateway for institutional investors via OTC desks, could also help to inject liquidity into the DeFi space. This means Tether is less likely to fall from its dollar peg and can act as collateral for DeFi products with less risk that a sudden price drop sparks a surge in liquidations, he added. See also, the DeFi flash loan attack that changed everything. We need to keep evolving, Arduino said. Tether has to look to its strengths. If the EU launched a global stablecoin tomorrow, of course, Tether cannot compete in market cap. Moving into DeFi allows the stablecoin provider to adapt its volatility hedging characteristics for a brand new use case. Amended lawsuit against Ripple now offers theory that XRP may not be a security. An amended complaint against Ripple has been filed by XRP investors in a long-running lawsuit involving allegations of breaches to U.S. securities law. The two-year class action, which claims Ripple, a blockchain payments infrastructure firm, violated securities rules with its sales and marketing of the XRP cryptocurrency, has been refiled with additional claims to back up the case that Ripple and its CEO, Brad Garlinghouse, had undertaken unfair or fraudulent business practices. The suit, with former XRP investor Bradley Sostak as lead plaintiff, was brought on behalf of all investors who purchased XRP tokens issued and sold by Ripple. It alleges a scheme to raise hundreds of millions of dollars through sales of an unregistered security, XRP, to retail investors. According to a court document filed on March 25, see below, a sixth claim for relief asserts false advertising in violation of California business law. Notably, this amendment appears to see the plaintiffs hedging their original case, stating this claim is made under the alternative theory that XRP is not a security. An additional seventh claim further accuses the firm of unfair competition in violation of California law, also under the theory that XRP is not a security. The amendments seem aimed to inject the alternative theory into the suit in case the judge rules Ripple did not issue and sell an unregistered security. The other notable changes to the suit take aim at Ripple and Garlinghouse, citing their statements about XRP being a utility token essential for international payments and that sales are primarily to market makers. However, as discussed above, more than 60% of XRP is owned by Ripple and none of that XRP is used for anything at all, other than to be sold in the future to invest, the plaintiffs claim. It also hits out at Garlinghouse's claims that he was very, very, very long XRP and was, on the HODL side, holding XRP for long-term gains. That, the filing states, was false when made as throughout 2017 Garlinghouse sold millions of XRP on various cryptocurrency exchanges. Review of the XRP ledger indicates that Garlinghouse sold at least 67 million XRP in 2017 and that he sold any XRP he received from Ripple within days of such receipt. Plaintiffs had the option to refile amended claims under California law within 28 days of the previous ruling. U.S. District Judge Phyllis Hamilton in the Northern District of California ordered in February the suit could proceed to trial. The action could include claims filed under federal law, but Judge Hamilton dismissed some claims filed under California state law, prompting the refiling. The order followed a hearing held in mid-January between the plaintiff, Bradley Sostack, and the defendant, Ripple, its XRP2 subsidiary and CEO, Garlinghouse. Cannabis shops are using Zapp's Lightning app during coronavirus cash crunch. It's now easier than ever to use Bitcoin to support regular businesses beyond the crypto bubble. Zapp founder Jack Mahlers, best known for Lightning-friendly Bitcoin services, just launched a desktop tipping product to complement the Strike Payments app. Just like the mobile app, the tipping feature allows senders to give either Bitcoin, BTC, or dollars while users receive dollars in their bank accounts. Each Strike username is automatically given a public tipping website. Mahlers works with trading desks on the back end so users only see a Venmo-like interface. Spenders can scan a QR code, the same way they would for sending fiat with a regular fintech app. Users are not even required to know what Bitcoin is. Every Strike user is given a public domain at strike.me, Mahlers said. We're using Lightning for really fast online settlement of value transfers. It's also beneficial for privacy on the sender's side. Read more, Zapp's new product lets merchants take dollars over Lightning Network. The Zapp team, which has been experimenting with Strike since January, onboarded two cannabis dispensaries last weekend. Johnny Kurish, general manager at Baldur's Helping Hands Herbals, said the closed beta program processed roughly $1,000 worth of purchases over the weekend. Now the dispensary will switch to only accepting contactless Strike payments, Kurish said, an anomaly in a region where most cannabis dispensaries are cash-only establishments. Employees at Helping Hands no longer touch customers to accept cash or cards. We're really lucky to have curbside drop-offs. We check the ID through the roll-up window, deliver the cannabis to a podium in front of the car, Kurish said. We're happy to reopen with an option that's safe for our staff. Early traction. Eventually, Mahlers said, he'd like to also allow options for debit cards so people can spend their Bitcoin tips at the grocery store as fiat. For now, the beta app for peer-to-peer transfers and its complimentary website for receiving tips has more than 5,000 people on the waiting list. Mahlers said he aims to open up the beta program to the public by summertime. So far, roughly 100 beta users are transacting with up to $20,000 a month. The point of the beta is to go at our own pace, Mahlers said. Read more, Bitcoin shopping gets a boost from social distancing. Just like PayPal, Zapp is a traditional money transmission business, Mahlers said, for customers who have bank accounts in any American state but New York. Plus, anyone who wants to receive Bitcoin can use Strike to send value to the Zapp Bitcoin wallet. Mahlers said he hopes, even beyond merchants, content makers and performers can use the Strike tipping feature to accept tips from fans around the world, since Bitcoin is a universal payments technology. We live trade as you use the app, Mahlers said, describing how Zapp scaled the back-end trading operation with custom algorithms. Our balance sheet is always remaining flat. GitHub is burying Bitcoin code inside an Arctic mountain to ride out the next 1,000 years. An icy mountain in Norway's Svalbard, an all but inhabitable Arctic archipelago covered in glaciers and inhabited by polar bears, is an unlikely safe haven for cryptocurrency code, let alone a pillar of modern-day civilization. But it's here, 250 meters underground in a forsaken coal mine, that GitHub has chosen to store reams of open-source code. That includes Bitcoin Core, by far the most popular code implementation of Bitcoin's underlying infrastructure and one of the most used repositories on GitHub. As a part of an archiving program for safeguarding an important part of technological history, a snapshot of all this code will be copied onto film reels and stored in a steel container, all done in an effort to keep the data alive and unscathed for 1,000 years. The team is currently getting this data ready. The official deposit into the mountain is planned for late April, a GitHub spokesperson told CoinDesk. But, while Bitcoin Core is featured, most cryptocurrency projects stored on GitHub will also be included, including Bitcoin's forward-looking Lightning Network, and the code behind other cryptocurrencies, such as Ethereum and Dogecoin. Organizations like the nonprofit Digital Library Internet Archive and the future-looking cultural nonprofit Long Now Foundation are backing the effort, and historians, anthropologists, and other scientists are advising it. Bitcoin and Ethereum coders are fans of the initiative. The more backups, the merrier, as Ethereum developer Ligi put it to CoinDesk. I think it's likely that at some point in the future the electronic record will be lost. It's all pretty fragile. Preserving some things on hard copy could definitely help avoid a hole in history, said Vladimir van der Laan, lead maintainer of Bitcoin Core. The archive potentially provides a way for people up to 1,000 years from now to figure out what on earth cryptocurrency was or how it evolved if it manages to last a millennium. In one sense, this is a fascinating section of financial history that we should preserve for future study, Avanti Chief Technology Officer and Bitcoin Core contributor Brian Bishop said. History's limits. While archiving cryptocurrency code could plug historical holes for historians, there are limits to what storing this information will enable. Van der Laan pointed out that, from a software engineer's perspective, the code might not make much sense to coders hundreds of years from now. As a developer, I do find the idea of a future historian trying to puzzle together our what goes for civilization from reams of clever hacks, spaghetti code and context-specific source code kind of amusing, Van der Laan said. Jason Teutsch, the founder of Ethereum infrastructure project Truebit and a computer science researcher, argued similarly, explanations of the code should sit alongside the raw material. The social, economic, regulatory and academic records depicting motivations and resources for code development may ultimately become more important than the code itself, he said. Read more, here's how to inspect Bitcoin's next, likely, major upgrade yourself. As a developer who hosts a wiki for futurist technological ideas, Avantis Bishop is looking to preserve information even further into the future. In fact, Bishop is awaiting a patent for a way to store information inside of DNA. He notes that the genetic instructions guiding an organism's growth can preserve information for hundreds of thousands of years. And while this project could help preserve some history, Bishop argues there's plenty of other important information out there that should be stored in a similar fashion. Beyond GitHub, I think they need to seriously consider archiving Sci-Hub, which has over 70 million scientific articles, Bishop said. It's one of the great feats of human intellect and progress, and it needs to be preserved. How financial models could move Bitcoin's price after the halving? Tobias A. Huber is a researcher with the Department of Management, Technology and Economics at ETH Zurich, in Switzerland. Every 4 years, the Bitcoin protocol halves the block reward that miners receive when they contribute a so-called block of transactions to the blockchain. Currently, the reward is 12.5 Bitcoins per block. The next halving will occur, soon, in May 2020. Built into the protocol to control Bitcoin's inflation, the previous halvings have coincided with massive rallies. After the first halving, which occurred in November 2012, Bitcoin's price increased from $12 to more than $650. After the second halving in July 2016, the price accelerated to almost $20,000 in late 2017. See also, CoinDesk Report, Bitcoin, the halving and why it matters. While it's, of course, uncertain whether the next halving will accelerate prices, the halvings seem to have driven Bitcoin's previous hype cycles. Naturally, the next halving has generated an intense debate whether it's already priced in or not. A popular model that's often evoked in these debates is the stock-to-flow model. It models the price of Bitcoin based on the so-called stock-to-flow ratio, which, initially, was used to value gold and other raw materials. By relating the stock i.e., the quantity issued to the flow i.e., the annual issued quantity, the model derives a prediction of a Bitcoin price post-halving of $55,000 to $100,000, which would correspond to a market cap of more than $1 trillion. Unsurprisingly, the stock-to-flow model has attracted quite some attention after it was published in March 2019. Various attempts to falsify the model have been launched, and for Bitcoin maximalists, it was another boost to their hyper-bullishness. See also, Bitcoin halving, explained. Now, according to the efficient market hypothesis (EMH), prices are just incorporating new information. It assumes the market is sufficiently fast and responsive to converge on an equilibrium price that correctly reflects all external, or so-called exogenous information. All market internal, or endogenous processes, in turn, are already reflected in prices. In this view, only exogenous inputs, for instance, an exchange hack, a central bank announcement, or a geopolitical event can change investors' anticipations and prices. Consequently, extreme events, such as bubbles or crashes, result simply from exogenous news that hasn't been factored into prices yet. For proponents of the EMH, Bitcoin's supply schedule, which is encoded into the protocol and known since the inception of the network, constitutes endogenous information and should, accordingly, already be priced in. And, most likely, most sophisticated market participants, such as market makers, have done so. But this doesn't mean the halving is fully priced in. Financial modeling is not a hard science like physics. The models don't just faithfully reproduce markets, they actively transform them. There's robust evidence that prices move too much compared with what one would expect from the EMH. Research shows only a small fraction of price movements can be explained by relevant news releases. Such findings suggest that price dynamics are mostly driven by endogenous positive feedback mechanisms between investors' anticipations and prices, a phenomenon George Soros has described as market reflexivity. In my opinion, irrespectively of whether the stock-to-flow model is valid or not, whether one believes in the EMH or expects an epic rally that will trigger hyperbitcoinization, what's often underappreciated in these debates is the fundamentally reflexive nature of financial markets. Markets, and especially Bitcoin, are reflexive phenomena. There's a positive feedback mechanism between expectations and prices. Expectations affect prices, which, in turn, influence traders' or investors' expectations and behavior. It's this self-reinforcing positive feedback loop that's also at the core of speculative bubbles and market crashes. See also, for crypto miners, Bitcoin's halving could mean a doubling in costs. Because of these reflexive dynamics, models can shape financial markets. Historically, there have been a few cases where a model reoriented the market it's supposed to model. The famous Black-Scholes options pricing model, for example, resulted in increased conformity between option price patterns and the model. That is, until the 1987 crash broke its validity. Similarly, current short volatility strategies, which use volatility both as an input for risk-taking and a source of return, have a transformative effect on equity markets, as they result in a systemic suppression of volatility. Financial modeling is not a hard science like physics. The models don't just faithfully reproduce markets, they actively transform them. They become what the famous sociologist Robert K. Merton called self-fulfilling prophecies. Ironically, Merton was the father of Robert C. Merton, whose infamous hedge fund long-term capital management became itself a self-fulfilling prophecy of financial doom. So, Bitcoin's halving, or the predictions of models such as the stock-to-flow model, could themselves become self-fulfilling prophecies. This could result in a self-validating feedback loop of upward price acceleration. This isn't to say that it will happen. But if enough investors and traders start to believe in them, the model and the reality might indeed start to converge. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.